We're here at the cafe, live, speaking with directors, and we're going to be speaking with our first director, Luis Sayhoya. He is the
director of Racing Extinction, Luis Sayhoya. Welcome.
Okay, well, let's just go right here. Louis's right here. Let's go. We'll get our underwriters in a little later. We got Louis. Let's go.
That's right. So Luis Sayhoya's film, The Cove, from the 2009 Sundance Film Festival, exposed viewers to the brutal practice of dolphin slaughter. The Academy Award-winning director now bears witness to a global problem, mankind's role in precipitating mass extinction, potentially resulting in the loss of half the world's species. So Luis, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So give us, you know, just the quick thumbnail sketch of what this film focuses on, if well, that's possible.
Yeah, you sort of gave it away, I guess. But I don't know if I'd go see that movie the way you described it. You know, there's been my own backstory is I was a photographer for National Geographic over the course of about 20 years. I did four stories on the Mesozoic. That's the midlife of the planet. And when I was actually here 5 years ago with The Cove, I took two books with me. One was by a buddy of mine who's the curator of the American Museum of Natural History in New York, Michael Novacek, and he wrote a book called Terra. And the first day I got here, I picked up this book, and he's talking about the sixth major extinction that's going on right now. And I thought, oh my God, that's depressing. So I picked up the other book I read. I was reading at the time, and it was A Reef in Time, and it's about the Great Barrier Reef and how that reef is now declining, and it's because we're in the middle of the sixth mass extinction. And I thought, I did a book on paleontologists. I wrote one. And I thought, how do I not know this? And I thought, this is the biggest story in the world. And so that began this journey that led me 5 years later to here. And, you know, my whole thing is, how do you make a film that's really, I think, you know, the most important, pressing story of our times, and make it not just informational, but get it entertaining. And like The Cove, it's an eco-thriller. So, right. You know, when I describe this film, it's like The Avengers, but it's real. You know, we have the real-life Iron Man in our movie. You know, Elon Musk, who is the inspiration for the Iron Man character, you know, Tony Stark in the Iron Man movies, he's in our film. And he does amazing things. And it's all wrapped around, how do we stop? I mean, you look at a guy like him, and, you know, he owns Tesla. He's the biggest installer of solar in America. He's building reusable rocket ships to supply the space station. The guy's like, you know, 40 years old. And you know, to me, he's like a huge inspiration for a younger generation to say, listen, the way we've been doing, you know, our business in this world is unsustainable. How do we make it better? And when he built the Tesla, like the Tesla S, it wasn't just the best electric car in the world. It's the best rated car ever made. And what we did, you know, one of the characters in our film was actually a Tesla. We turned it into like a Bond vehicle. Because we wanted something that was really cool. I love tech toys. One way that we broke into The Cove is that The Cove is also sort of like an Ocean's 11 film. It's about a unique group of characters that come together, all with special skills. We had world champion freedivers that come together. We have military gear that we use to break into The Cove. It feels like an espionage film, right? And The Cove, it's the next film, Racing Extinction. We have all the same people back, but the toys are bigger and better. And the car has an electroluminescent paint job. We change the color of the car on the flick of a button. First car ever in the world to do that. We have a forward looking infrared camera that comes out of the frunk, is what they call it. Whether it's normally an engine on an internal combustion engine car, we put a camera there that comes up out of the hood, and it actually can see the hidden worlds of greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane.
Right. So, but the film is about extinction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you got to get people in the theater by having a cool story. The first two acts are about extinction, but what it really picks up after any act at the end of Act Two, since Aristotle, you want to give people something that's going to bring them up, and that's what we do.
Nell and I host a show on environmental issues every week. That's our challenge, because many of our stories have an angle to them that can be quite gloomy or so, and yet another story about, oh, this animal threatened, this watershed going dry, this population becoming unsustainable, etc. So you're right. So we're always trying to bring out Something that's positive out there, something that's upbeat.
Here's the cool thing I think about the solutions to the mass extinction. They're all upgrades. Everything that you can think of to rid the world of this problem is actually an upgrade. When we did The Cove, I did a carbon assessment of what it took to make that film, and I was horrified. The worst thing you can do to the environment is make a movie about it. I put 646 tons in the first 2 years of production of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So I changed the way we got our energy around that film. We installed 120 solar panels. I now generate 140% of the energy we need for just home and work off the roof. Which means in December, the darkest month of the year, I get a check from the electric company for excess energy production.
Right.
I've been driving electric cars in town for the last 7 years, and the license plate on it says VUS. It stands for Vehicle Using Sun. It's the opposite of an SUV. I don't pay for gas. I pull up to my house and I charge it into the sun. It's such a beautiful thing to thumb your nose at the fossil fuel company is doing the stuff that where you actually get money back. Yeah, you're driving. Without paying for gasoline, when people are crying about $4 a gallon gas, it's like gas was like last century, folks.
So last century. So extinction is like you said, it's the biggest issue in the world. How do you bring that down to a local scale or something sort of more easily understandable?
The biggest driver of extinction is habitat destruction for food for human consumption. And the way we're doing it is extremely unsustainable. We are at a Whole Foods. John Mackey, who runs this place, I'm talking about another film. He's actually a vegan. So am I. All protein comes from plants. Every single bit of it. Whether you eat a cow, a pig, a chicken, or a fish. And so what we're doing, when we mow down the rainforest of South America, where we're killing all these species in a hot zone, is we're using that to raise, let's say, soybeans that we're going to feed the cows that we're going to eat. It's an incredibly unsustainable practice. And John Mackey at Whole Foods knows this.
Right.
Everybody knows this in the environmental movement. And so what we need to do with 7 billion, 7.2 billion people, soon to be 9 billion, all eating animal products, we need to get off of this unsustainable thing where we're eating wild animals or eating animals that are eating the protein from plants, and then we eat the middleman.
Right.
I would say just cut out the middleman.
Right. Very inefficient linkages in protein production or consumption.
Yeah, if you look at the greenhouse gases that are caused by raising animals for food consumption, it exceeds the greenhouse gases than all the greenhouse emissions from the entire transportation sector. So the best thing you can do to save the environment, to save the wild, is to eat more vegetarian meals three times a day. You can practice saving the earth three times a day. I mean, to me, it's the perfect solution. That's at a very basic level, and that's
right.
Something everybody needs to, should do, not just for their own health, but the health of the environment. Getting off of fossil fuels, just we found a creative way to do it, with solar panels and electric cars. Certainly the best thing you can do is bike or walk more, but, electric cars are far more efficient. Even if you're getting the energy from coal and then you're using it from the grid to feed your electric car, it's still a better solution than internal combustion engines. So, I hope people have more creative ways of getting off of fossil fuels than we did. But that's what the film's really built, is to inspire people to come up with their own ideas.
Right.
So I watched the trailer for it, and it seems kind of like high adrenaline. Is that accurate? I mean, it's
thrilling. The film rocks. I mean,
yeah.
the way I make the film is it's a film that I'd want to see. It doesn't feel like a documentary.
Informative, informational.
Yeah, you're going to get the exposition on the way, in the way to a story that's actually, hopefully impactful. All the films I do is I care about is when you're in the audience and you're looking at that screen, every second of it is exciting. It's there for a reason. We thought about it. It's not filler. This is like it's like the Avengers but real. To me, I wanted to make it fun. I wanted to make it so my kids could see it. Both my kids are coming in from different parts of the planet today to see it tomorrow. I'm actually really proud of this film because a lot of great Hollywood directors I met said, after a first successful film, a director shouldn't make a second one. That always sucks. And this is my second film.
Right.
And so what I want to disprove that. I want to, to me this film is more, it's heavier than The Cove. It's sort of like, I would compare it to, it's more Pulp Fiction than it is Reservoir Dogs. But it's okay. It's a film that's exciting. It's full of adventure. It's like a Bond film. You know, we have all these great tech toys. We bust bad guys, you know, doing horrible things to, you know, to the planet. And it's fun to watch. You know, it's like, we have a higher bar than most Hollywood films. The Hollywood producers, all they care about the audience is say, we need to get butts in seats. They look at you and I as $10 and a box of popcorn. What I do is I look at, okay, we not only need to get people into theater, we need to entertain them at the same time, at the same level. And when they get out of the theater, what we need to do is educate them that, you know, we have to change their lives. And so my bar is to, you know, look at people at the theater as minds and seats and then inspire those people to action when they get out of it. It's a very, you know, more difficult, higher bar than most right. films.
Because like you're saying, business as usual is not going to, is not going to win the day here. We're in the middle of our sixth extinction, and this is probably the first extinction of those six that is human-based.
Yeah, well, the last one was 65 million years ago when we were little rodents.
Those were out of our hands. But this one is actually going to be generated by us. Yeah, it is being generated by us.
Yeah, this new epoch is called the Anthropocene. It means the age of man. And, you know, our own species name, Homo sapiens, means wise ones. And how wise is that? When one species is wiping out maybe half the species on the planet by the end of the century, what we're doing now is, you know, never been done in history. And here's the interesting thing. To me, that is not a downer. What that means is that we're the last generation on the planet that actually can affect the change that we need. So when this is the kind of situation that's so epic, so large, and so immediate that we can't wait to solve the problem for our kids to grow up. It's us. Everybody in this room, everybody listening out there in radio land, everybody has to get off their chairs and do something every single day to solve this issue. If you don't, you know, in the Cove, I say that you're either an activist or an inactivist. And when you're talking about the sixth mass extinction, what we want to do is educate people that, you know, if you're still driving around an internal combustion engine vehicle, if you're doing all this stuff, I want that to become like, you know, smoking in a restaurant.
Right.
You know, or, you know, if you're eating meat, you know, do that outside around the corner with the smokers. because once you start to see the impact that that's having, you know, and people draw those lines, they're going to be saying, you know, people that are aware would be going, how could you do that? You know, and you think that's crazy to think that. But, like, you know, 1998, we were still smoking on planes.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as a wonderful example. And to tell that to kids now, they would have a difficult time processing that. Smoking on planes? Really? You did that?
Yeah, really. Exactly.
But now, so you want to continue that same attitude to other habits and behaviors.
Yeah, we're evolving. You know, we're evolving slower than I would like. I know we're all going to reach that same place. There's just no physical way that, you know, humanity can all be eating meat for a living. You know, that's the way to go forward is to start eating more plants. Which, you know, like I said, all protein comes from plants. So why wouldn't you go for that? You know, the gladiators, they were called the barley men because they were vegetarians. They were vegans.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it's a myth. It's the most dangerous myth in the world that you need protein from animals to get your
substance and health, et cetera. If you just join us, we're speaking with Louis Saihoya. I hope we pronounce that.
No, there's an S at the end. Sohoyas.
Sohoyas. He's the director of the documentary Racing Extinction. It's going to have its premiere
11:30
tomorrow.
At the
Mark.
I can't believe it.
The big moment is approaching.
I'll be there. Are you going to be there? I have a ticket.
No, I'll be there
you
later.
Have a ticket.
I have a ticket.
You sold out.
If I mention your name, free popcorn. At least
a Kleenex. I'll give you a free Kleenex.
So I want to hear a little bit about how you got into this this business of making documentary films. You know, you used to be
a
photographer.
It's a business?
Yeah.
They don't make
Maybe
money
that's
doing
the wrong
this.
Word. The hobby of the passion. But how did you make that shift from being, you know, a photographer for National Geographic and jump into film?
Well, a buddy of mine, he was actually from Utah. His name was Jim Clark. He became my dive buddy. He's a serial entrepreneur. He started Netscape. You know, he invented the first commercial internet browser. We became dive buddies, and he did another. What, you know, he did. He was the Steve Jobs of his day. he had a company called Silicon Graphics, which was like very high speed, you know, desktop computing back, you know, when I was a kid growing up. And he made three companies from scratch, all worth over $1 billion. Now he's my dive buddy. So, like when John F. Kennedy called to put Americans on the moon by the end of the decade, Jim was working for Boeing for the Saturn project, and he said, you know, he was working around the computers that was actually the bottleneck for the whole system, and he heard John F. Kennedy give that rousing speech, and he was like, there's no way it's going to happen unless those computers get sped up. So he did that. He sped them up 20-fold. He's a kid in college, and he speeds up the computers 20-fold and makes the whole space program viable. Now, this guy becomes my buddy, and we're diving all around the world, and every time, you know, he'd pick me up on his planes, we go on the world's biggest yachts that he built, and we're seeing the oceans disappear before our eyes. Every time we go back to, say, the Galapagos, we're seeing this devastation. And while we were in the Galapagos for the third time, we saw fishermen illegally fishing in a marine sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And he turned to me and said, somebody should do something about this. And I said, well, how about you and I? And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, we'll use your money in my eye, and we'll make films. And now, I had never made a film before. And
it was a bold proposal then.
It was. But you know, when you're sitting around a guy that's like your childhood hero and now your best friend, and that sort of greatness, that aspiration rubs off on you. Because I'm seeing this guy, you know, change the world with every business he creates. And I thought, well, I want a piece of that, but I don't want to make money. I want to actually use that idea, you know, to use my vision to actually help save the planet. I mean, it sounds really crazy, but, you know, here's a guy that actually, you know, does change the world almost with everything he does. So we started this organization called the Oceanic Preservation Society, OPS, and The Cove was our first film. And The Cove, you know, it's the most winning documentary in history. It was the first film to sweep all the film guilds. It has a little gold man somewhere that people do their selfies with. And the film is actually, it's about dolphin hunting, but they're killing about a two-thirds less dolphins now in Japan because of that movie. You know, so films to me are a weapon of mass construction. You know, you can use you drop a bomb on somebody, you kill them, but you drop a documentary, you change them.
You drop a mind bomb, which is who we're going to be talking to next, Jerry Rothwell, director of How to Change the World. And that's a term they use, a mind bomb, and how to use media as the message. To get out environmental stewardship and responsibility.
Yeah.
We only have a couple minutes, Louis. So you did mention The Cove. What is going on there now? I mean, have behaviors changed there?
Yeah, like I said,
it's such a culturally ingrained thing.
But cultures and social situations, they evolve, and you know, we're helping them speed up.
Yeah.
Like I said, they're killing about two-thirds less dolphins in Japan right now, and that's because we do these educational campaigns to people in the town, people in these, whether they still hunt dolphins and eat them.
Yeah.
And, you know, all dolphin meat is toxic, not just a little bit. It has anywhere from 5,000 to 5,000 times more mercury than allowed by Japanese law. So we've been pushing that message out. Every time I talk to a Japanese, you know, media concern, I try to use the word mercury in every sentence so they can't edit me out. Because, if you talk about humanity issues or these animals are more sentient, intelligent, they'll say to us, well, what about cows, pigs, and chickens? And I would say, yeah, what about them? You know, but if you eat pigs, if they had 5,000 times more mercury than allowed by anybody's law, I'd say, you know, foreigner or not, I'd hope somebody come and tell us what's what.
Right.
So the film is still doing its work out there. In SeaWorld stock, you look at SeaWorld stock, it's dropped half in just the last year, partly because of our movie and partly because of another one that we helped spawn called Blackfish.
Right.
But we have a divestment campaign going on to all the major concerns that own SeaWorld stock. And, you know, the last quarter, they dropped, like I said, they dropped by half. You see the spike of the stock that day. They lost like $750 million. That's directly related to our divestment campaign.
Right.
So we're not just making movies. We're working on campaigns behind the issues to solve the issues. You know, to me, it's not movies that we're making. We're starting movements. So we're working on that. Now we tackle the biggest one in the world, getting the humanity off of fossil fuels, because we're actually killing the planet.
Well, the name of the film is Racing Extinction. The director is Louis Saihoyas. Thank you very much, Louis, for taking the time to chat with you this morning on the Sundance Reel, and we'll look forward to seeing the film.
That's
going to be shown 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times.
Wow, cool. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming in.
Lots of luck, Louis. All right, let's take a break for some underwriters. You're listening to the Sundance Reel here at Whole Foods Market Cafe. Come on down. It's 5% Give Back Day, or Giving Day here with
That's
Whole
right.
Foods. 5% of their proceeds goes to KPCW. So we'll be back with the director or representatives from How to Change the World. It's the Sundance Reel. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts, here to tell you about Park City Round Valley Clinic, a proud supporter of KPCW. At the Park City Round Valley Clinic, you'll find family practice medicine, pain management, urology, sports medicine, and internal medicine doctors. They're all accepting new patients, and some even have evening appointments available. The Park City Round Valley Clinic is located at 750 Round Valley Drive, just a stone's throw away from Park City Medical Center, and is part of the not-for-profit Intermountain Healthcare System.
Support for KPCW comes from the Wasatch Brew Pub, offering weekend brunch at the top of Main Street featuring traditional favorites, as well as Midday Marys and mimosas. Private event space available. Wasatch Brew Pub, misbehaving in Utah since 1986. WasatchBeers.com.
Hi, this is State Farm Insurance Agent Benita Vanderquay, longtime volunteer DJ and sponsor of KPCW. With over 22 years of State Farm experience, I assist clients with their insurance and financial planning needs. I offer insurance and financial services, including life, health, auto, and homeowners insurance. I can be reached at 435-657-2220.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center, a not-for-profit community hospital and proud supporter of KPCW. I've told you about Park City Medical Center being a great place to work, but it's also a great place to volunteer. If you're looking to make a difference in your community, consider volunteering at the hospital. We are looking for people who can volunteer in three-hour shifts, Monday through Friday, from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Our volunteers take meals to patients, deliver flowers and gifts, help with projects and special events, and truly make a difference in the healing process and in our patients' lives. If you'd like to become a hospital volunteer, visit parkcitymedicalcenter.org to apply.